This is the Happy Rant Sports Podcast, in which Ted Cluck and Barnabas Piper rant about old sports, new sports, sports books, sports movies, and anything else related to sports that they feel like. Enjoy.
Hey, welcome to the Happy Rant Sports Podcast. I am Ted Cluck, joined, as always, back in studio by Barnabas Piper. And Pipe, much like our boy Ron, I've been traveling for the last 3 weeks. So my home studio here in Jackson feels a little bit foreign. I'm just getting back here, getting my bearings. But I returned to civilization with some happy news awaiting me, Piper. And that is that Johnny Manziel, our favorite CFL quarterback, star of the Manziel Minute here on the program, was traded from the Hamilton Tiger Cats to the Montreal Alouettes. So in addition to NFL training camp starting, we've got a big Manziel trade that we need to unpack. And
can I just start by saying that those two team names trump anything? Trigger warning, I use the word trump. Completely defeat any team name that the NFL has to offer.
Dude, they so do.
And I don't know what a Tiger Cat or an Alouette is, but the names are way cooler.
I think we've talked about how redundant Tiger Cat is. That's like saying dog pit bull, you know? But I do love it. And I can tell you this too, in case you haven't watched a lot of CFL this year, I'm not making any assumptions one way or the other, but those two teams have magnificent uniforms. And I think those two teams' uniforms would be top fivers if they were in the NFL. So tip of the cap to the CFL, to the Hamilton Tiger Cats, and the Montreal Alouettes for pulling off an interesting trade here midseason. Manziel was kind of languishing on the bench behind a guy named Jeremiah Masoli there in Hamilton, who was playing really pretty good football. He was one of the best quarterbacks in the CFL in the back half of last season. So it was a weird logjam in their quarterback room. To his credit, Manziel said all the right things about the Hamilton experience, you know, got along well with Masoli, was happy to be there, enjoyed working with June Jones and his staff, but he is off to Montreal. Montreal, Pipe, just for a little context, has been the most abysmal team in the CFL for the last two or three years. They've just been really, really
bad. So what you're saying is the man who was drafted by the Cleveland Browns is now going to the Montreal Browns.
He basically is. He's okay. Going to the Montreal-Cleveland Browns. However, I have become sort of a Montreal fan this year, in part because of their sweet uniform, but in part because I sensed that they were going to trade for Manziel. So I've been following Montreal, and I have to tell you, their roster isn't as bad as it appears at first glance. So I think Montreal is trending in the right direction. They have some players on their team that I really enjoy watching, and I think it's Manziel could be an interesting catalyst for that team in terms of opening up their offense. And quarterback was really – it was one of these trades where quarterback was really the weak link for them. They kind of had nobody at that position going into the season, and they needed to make a move of some kind. So,
Which is to say they were doomed because, like, you can get away in other sports with not having a star at a position. You can't get away in football without having a good quarterback.
Dude, right, unless you're completely loaded everywhere else, like the Jacksonville Jaguars. So
yes,
you
fair.
Know they're a player
it does,
too.
It does happen.
Dude, right. So they were literally one or two plays from going to the Super Bowl this last season. You know, we were one or two plays away from, you know, Blake Bortles beating Tom Brady in a championship game. And you know, so I think Jacksonville is kind of trying to work that model, but in a league that's so spread out and so pass heavy, you know, not having a guy back there who can really pull the trigger on a consistent basis. Montreal was just, they were hamstrung by that. So Pipe, let me explain this trade. As a CFL fan, I'm going to do my best to unpack this for you. And then we can talk about maybe which team got the better of this trade. So Montreal sent their elite pass rusher, Jamal Westerman, who was in the league for a little while. Westerman's interesting in that he's actually a Canadian national. So he's a Canadian national. He played for a little while in the league. I think he played for Dallas and Green Bay. He's been in Montreal as one of the top three or four pass rushers in the league. So
did he go to college in the States, or did he play like at University of Toronto or Ontario or some of those? Because, you know, there are some collegiate football teams in Canada that they don't get any publicity, but they're around. Was he a stateside guy?
He was a stateside guy. So okay. I'm actually looking it up right now. Okay, so he played in Buffalo. He played for the Jets. He had a brother who went to Eastern Michigan, who's also on the Montreal Alouettes. But Jamal Westrum played at Rutgers. So he's 6'2", 257. He's 33. Interesting thing about the CFL pipe, they kind of let players go longer. And a lot of their best players are older, which is an interesting thing to me. I think the NFL has a little bit of an age bias in that, like, if you're 25 and you haven't, you know, become a star or a starter, like, they pretty much give up on you. But Westerman's 33. He's probably one of the best pass rushers in the CFL. So I think it's an interesting league in that there's something to be said for, you know, letting a guy kind of mature into the athlete that he's going to become. So Westerman goes to Hamilton. So he will immediately bolster their pass rush. And what's interesting about it is he gives them a real interesting chess piece in that at any given time in the CFL, you have to have a certain number of Canadians on the field versus a certain number of Americans. So it's called the ratio.
Is that a rule?
It is a rule. Yeah. So
if this was the United States, they would get, I mean, just some, I realize the entirety of Canada is left leaning, but apparently not that left leaning. Cause in the United States, if that was a rule, it would imagine the rancor that would cause.
Oh, dude, it would cause incredible rancor. And it's actually a really fun rule because you get guys like Westerman who are totally elite, who qualify as nationals. But then you get guys who, you know, went to the University of Calgary or whatever and maybe are a little limited athletically. And they're on the field with these elite guys who are in NFL camps. So it really makes for an interesting game strategy wise because you have to have X number of Canadians on the field. So Westerman gives Hamilton a really interesting national player, and they'll actually have two national defensive ends now, which is a really nice advantage for them because that means they can plug in American guys at some of the more skill positions. So savvy move. I think it's an interesting move for Hamilton in that they kind of got rid of the quarterback controversy because I think, you know, every single game the story was, gosh, if Masoli does one thing that's not spectacular, should we put in Manziel? And I think that was causing him to press a little bit. So I think we'll see a better Jeremiah Masoli.
Looking at it, it looks like he's been absolutely shredding this year, though, just in terms of, like, just tearing up defenses.
Dude, Masoli has been. He's been doing Masoli things. And what's interesting about Masoli is that he's really analogous to Manziel when Manziel's playing well. So they do a lot of designed runs from Masoli. He's really good at getting the ball out. He's really good when the play breaks down.
He was a Chip Kelly quarterback, wasn't he?
He was a Chip Kelly quarterback. He played at Oregon. And I think the knock on him was size. You know, he's not real tall. Like Manziel, he's not real tall. So
is he a lefty?
He might be. You know what? I don't remember.
Did he take over for Mariota?
He came after Mariota.
Yeah, because I feel like the guy who came after Mariota was sort of a 5'11", stockier guy, but I think he was a lefty too, which makes me like him even more.
Dude, absolutely. Yeah, Masoli's stocky, so he doesn't quite fit the NFL paradigm. He actually is like pretty Baker Mayfield-ish to me, in that Mayfield's a little more stocky than Manziel was and obviously can run, can throw it. So, you know, and Westerman will really, really improve Hamilton's pass rush. So I think Hamilton did a nice job in this trade. I actually think Montreal, obviously, they fill a need with Johnny Manziel. They also got two starting linemen from Hamilton. So two starting offensive linemen that'll bolster their O-line. I believe both of those guys – no, one of them was a national. One of them was an import, an American player. So they get two starters on the offensive line. They lose Westerman. Obviously, Montreal gets Manziel, and he plays tonight. So I don't know if he's going to start tonight or if they're going to, you know, let him – you know, kind of learn again for another week
He never pays any attention to playbooks, you can probably just throw him right in there.
Dude, that's what I'm thinking. He's such an improv guy. I think he gets on the field tonight and I can't wait to watch. I think it'll be really interesting. So big trade in the CFL. My team, the Montreal Alouettes, gets Johnny Football. They've only won one game this year, so there's nowhere to go but up for the Montreal Alouettes. And I think this is a really interesting move for them in a league that's very... It seems like certain teams are quarterback rich and the top two or three teams in the league are kind of too deep at quarterback. And then you had a team like Montreal that was really, you know, really quarterback poor. So I think they get better. I hope Johnny Manziel, Johnny Football, plays great, and we get to read more stories about him. So, Piper, though, I want to talk about like how my relationship with the CFL is going to change because of training camp starting in the NFL. I feel a little bit like I'm cheating on the CFL now with the NFL. I've been such an ardent supporter of the CFL this summer and last summer too when I kind of discovered it. But I feel a little conflicted in that I find myself looking at training camp stories and kind of being excited about the NFL too. So, Pipe, what's your state of mind as NFL training camp starts? Are you excited? What are you excited about? Who are you excited to watch, et cetera?
Well, first of all, it's 111 degrees outside and I'm sweating just thinking about it, which means it doesn't exactly feel like training camp should be starting. It feels like it should be a little ways away, but it is. Absolutely. So the impending pleasure of football season is wonderful. You know, my kids are going back to school next week. My, you know, football season is starting. This is a wonderful time of year. It's the most wonderful time of year, especially because Ronnie Martin's not on this podcast. Big picture, it's awesome. As a Vikings fan, I'm still reeling from last year.
Dude, really? Talk about that, man. Because usually training camp kind of signals the wiping away of last year, the clean slate. Everybody's full of optimism. Everybody's team's going to the Super Bowl. So talk about your feelings vis-a-vis last year. And do you think there's going to be any like residual hangover effect from the team itself on that?
Well, answer the second question first. I don't think there will be a hangover effect because, you know, like if they kind of ran it back again, it would be a hangover effect, you know, with Keenum and whoever else. But sure. They're getting back Dalvin Cook, who missed most of the year, and then they signed.
Dude, such an explosive player, man. That's frightening.
He's the reason I'm excited to watch them, because that's pretty fantastic. You know, they didn't really add anybody in the offseason. They brought back their defense. They drafted, you know, a couple guys who were potential starters. They added a little depth on the O-line, but basically running it back again. But then they signed Kirk Cousins, and that's, you know, so when you have a new quarterback, it feels like a whole different team.
Yeah.
The thing is, they went 13-3 last year, and it was sort of a magical season in the sense of they had a great defense and an offense that was opportunistic and made some plays, and Keenum played over his head. And I think there's like a 11% chance they go 13-3 again.
I totally agree.
I think they're like an 11-5 team, which is really good, but it's going to feel potentially like a letdown, even though that's still really good.
I agree, and I think they caught the rest of the NFC North in a down cycle last year. Yep.
They knocked Aaron Rodgers out.
They knocked Aaron Rodgers out. Green Bay had a lot of other injuries at wide receiver and running back. They didn't really figure out until the end, and the Bears were a mess last year. I think, you know, not just because I'm a Bears fan, but I think the Bears are going to be a really interesting team this year in that they basically bought themselves a receiving core. They have brand new players at both wide receiver positions and tight ends. Trubisky's a year older, so I think the Bears are going to be much more formidable this year.
Yeah, their new head coach, Nagy, is supposed to be – he's sort of from the Andy Reid tree, so a creative offensive guy, which should be good for Trubisky. They've got good running game, decent offensive line.
Jordan Howard.
Solid defense. Like they're especially their front seven is really strong. Yeah, I think they're the worst team in the division. But they could be a 7-win team, you know?
Dude, like, they totally could.
And the Lions are, you know, who knows what they are under Matt Patricia, but you have Matt Stafford, and that means that you can put up yards on anybody. You know, you might turn the ball over, whatever. They're a little inconsistent as well. But again, that's probably a 7-9 win team, you know?
Yeah, and then, I think it's going to be a tough division for...
And Aaron Rodgers is terrifying because he is... I think Brady's the best quarterback in the league consistently. I think Rodgers has the highest ceiling by far.
No, I agree. A great Rodgers game at this stage of both of their careers is better than a great Brady game. You know, I think
he can just make plays that nobody else in the NFL can make. And so that means that, you know, if you're leading, you know, 20-16 and they're on a, you know, they have 90 seconds left. It's terrifying because they can absolutely score a touchdown from anywhere on the field at any point because Rodgers is nuts. And so as a Vikings fan, I just, I, you know, I feel like it's going to be a rough season. I don't trust Kirk Cousins. I think he's fine, but like, I don't think he's that much better than Keenum in terms, especially not given the money. And then last year was just one of the highest points in my Vikings watching year, followed a week later by a very typical just getting it handed to him in the NFC Championship game. It's really hard to be super geeked about this season.
Pipe, this is an interesting year for you emotionally, because I think, you know, you're a new, you're kind of treading on new ground here, and that you have a good team with like freakishly high expectations.
I don't like high expectations. I'm just,
in life,
I'm opposed to high expectations. I like moderate to low expectations so that everything is a pleasant surprise. Like last year was a delightful surprise.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And this year, you know, you're going in as the front runner with all these expectations. And I just want to be, I want to be clear about something vis-a-vis our friendship, though, as we move forward with the sports podcast. You know, and the audience knows that I do not like Kirk Cousins, but I just want to free you, Piper, to be excited about him and excited about the Vikings as the season moves forward, because I will be enough of a pro on the program to be able to hear you. I don't want you to feel like you can't like gush about the Vikings if they get off to like an 8-0 start or something crazy like that. So
As a Vikings fan, if they get off to an 8-0 start, I'll be waiting for Kirk Cousins to break his hamate bone or something. Like the other shoe is a perpetual thing that drops.
Dude, and right. So, I almost think like an 8-0 start is like the worst case scenario for you. Like you will be a mess emotionally if they start 8-0.
Right. If they win 2 out of every 3 games, so they go 2-1 and then they're 4-2 and 6-3, like that will feel okay to me, because like the other shoe is being put off by those occasional losses, especially if there are no catastrophic injuries during that process.
Yeah, so if they go like 11-5, you know, they win the division, you know, that's probably emotional best case scenario for you. And they stay relatively healthy. So.
And honestly, like if they go 11-5 and the Packers are 12-4, like it'll suck to eat a little crow because Packers fans won't shut up. But but then they're a wild card team at 11-5. I kind of like that better, because I mean I would stack them up against anybody in the NFL. I think the Eagles are the clear favorites, but I'll stack the Vikings up against anybody and say they have as good a chance to win. I just don't want to be the favorite. I hate playing the favorite. I hate playing from in front. That makes me very nervous.
Dude, do you sense the perception that, like, in spite of their Super Bowl victory, the Eagles have somehow managed to, like, finagle not into the favorite role? I just don't sense a ton of Eagles hype.
Yeah, I think the perception is that they caught lightning in a bottle because Nick Foles was their quarterback. And some of that is true.
Yeah.
But then you have to remember that Carson Wentz was playing at an MVP level for, what, 13 games? Something like that. And if he comes back, you know, at 80 or 90% of himself, or 100% by the end of the year, that team is bonkers talented. And they kept their head coach. They lost both their offensive coordinators. That might hurt them. But but the system is in place. Like and they added Michael Bennett. And didn't lose anybody of note. They're scary.
Dude, they are scary, and they're just like doubling down on pass rushers.
Yeah.
You know, they're just getting like freakishly deep up there. They have so many guys who can do so many things. So I want to play a little word association with you, Piper. I'm just gonna throw out names of players or teams or coaches, and I want you to respond to them, because I think there are some really interesting storylines going into this year. There are some teams that I'm just like beside myself with excitement to watch, and I can't remember necessarily feeling that way going into an NFL season for the last few years. So the first name I want to throw out is John Gruden. John Gruden, new head coach, Oakland Raiders. The team's moving to Las Vegas. Gruden hasn't coached in a long, long time. Big personality. What's your feeling on that?
I think John Gruden is playing possum.
Interesting.
I was another columnist who wrote this. I don't remember who. I wish I could give credit by name. I don't want to steal anybody's ideas. But, you know, he's been out of the league coaching-wise for close to 10 years maybe. And the game has completely changed in that time. And so there's this perception, especially given who he's signing. It's a lot of older veteran guys. yeah. the way that he talks about establishing the run, which is not the way the NFL works anymore.
Yeah.
But I think he's playing everybody.
Interesting.
I think if you go back and watch, you know, his last 8 years of, you know, the quarterback camp thing that he's done on ESPN and yeah. his Monday Night Football stuff, I really don't like listening to him talk. He annoys me.
Yeah.
But the man knows football.
He does.
And there's no way that he has missed how football has developed.
Yeah.
And he, you know, he's interacted with every head coach.
Yeah.
Every quarterback, every up and coming quarterback, which means he's also interacted with the college game. And
yeah.
and so I think that maybe not first year, just because there could be some sort of like he's got to limber up a little bit as a coach.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think he's going to be a really good coach again.
Dude, it's interesting. Derek Carr might be the best quarterback he's ever had. I mean, Rich Gannon aside, you know, Rich Gannon was really, really
good.
Rich
Gannon had a great year, but but he was never good any other time in his career, which makes you think that that might have been thanks to Gruden.
Dude, Rich Gannon actually like is proof of my older quarterbacks theory, which is I think he got better as he got older. And he never really got huge mm-hmm. opportunities until he was in his mid-30s. But you look at the quarterbacks that Gruden rolled into seasons with previously in his coaching career, and it's not an impressive list. No. I mean, we're talking about guys like Sean King and Brad Johnson, and Gruden always got it done with like
– Brad Johnson's like, another one who got better as he got older.
That's it. Absolutely. Absolutely. And I think Gruden got a lot out of those guys. So to me, it will be very interesting to see – you know, what he gets out of a Derek Carr who kind of regressed a little bit last year. So, you know, there was a lot of Derek Carr hype and excitement 2 years ago, but last year he kind of came down to earth. So it'll be interesting to see what he gets out of both Derek Carr, if he can resurrect Amari Cooper, who was an elite receiver out there a few years ago and kind of regressed a little bit last year too. So that one is going to be very interesting. Next team, Piper, Cleveland Browns, a team that I'm very excited about. Big, big roster moves in the offseason. We've got a little bit of Josh Gordon drama that broke yesterday or the day before with him not mm-hmm. reporting to training camp on time, which I think is massively worrisome to the Cleveland Browns community. What do you make of this team?
Well, on the Josh Gordon thing, my understanding was that he let them know that it wasn't going to happen, so there wasn't a dispute. It seemed like a voluntary, like a therapy kind of thing where he's...
Gotcha.
You know, it sounds like he's in an adult, mature way trying to handle his struggles with addiction. And that doesn't mean yep. that he's relapsed, but, reading between the lines, I wonder if he looks at training camp and kind of getting back into the NFL life and knows that there are some triggers there. And so he's trying to get himself right before getting into that situation. So that it could be worrisome, but only in the same way that everything about him is worrisome, because his career and in some cases, his life is kind of hanging by a thread. But I don't know that means that he's just not going to be around this year. He could come back and do really well. I hope that's the case. He's an awesome player, and then also just for him as a person to bounce back.
Dude, when he's right, he is so freaky.
Yeah.
I mean, he's like top five in the league when he's right.
Yeah, he's like Terrell Owens with hops.
Dude, that was the one I was going to say. He's like a young T.O., like a young – freakishly athletic T.O.
Yeah, he's more of a like T.O. was more like a go across the middle and, you know, not a jump ball guy.
Yeah.
Whereas Gordon he can go up and get it. So he's like T.O. mixed with like the A.J. Green go get the ball up high above guys kind of thing. But yeah, he's a monster. I think the Browns are fascinating. I think everything on the Browns hinges on Hugh Jackson, which is terrifying because I don't know if he's a good coach. I don't think he is. And I think he will be coaching to save his job, not coaching to develop a winning team with a pretty talented young roster.
Yeah, I'll be interested to see what Tyrod Taylor does there. I've long been a Tyrod Taylor fan. He put a garbage Bills team on his back last year and drug it to the playoffs. So it'll be interesting to see. I hope he has his full allotment of receivers and guys stay healthy. And like you said, I hope Hugh can get out of his own way enough to you know, to really let that team mature and do well. So
I think the best thing for the team and for Hugh is probably to start Tyrod and give him at least half the season, maybe the full season if they're competing. So that Baker can just it's a huge adjustment to the NFL game, especially when you have some physical limitations. I mean, Drew Brees took a couple years to get good, and then again got better with age. You know, the theme continues. And I think that's sort of like Drew Brees should be the guy that Baker is trying to be. And so, I mean, if he wants to save his job, if he can start Tyrod Taylor and go like, say, 3-5 in the first, you know, in the first 8 games, or 4-4 even. Yeah. And then maybe they're on the cusp of competing for a wild card spot. And so they just run it back with him, especially if Gordon's not there. Having a quarterback who can manage a game, make good decisions, not turn the ball over, create with his legs, that's going to be beneficial. And then cut ties with him or roll into backup next year when Baker's ready.
Yeah.
But starting Baker right out of the gates is going to get Hugh fired.
Yeah.
And I think Baker's going to I think he'll be a fine NFL quarterback, but I think he would struggle.
Dude, I totally agree. I think that should be Tyrod's team maybe for the whole season, you know, and I think he's going to play well, and then they'll have some decisions to make after the season. But Pipe, who's the rookie you're most excited to watch?
I mean, I think the one who is going to make the most exciting plays is Saquon Barkley.
Interesting.
Simply because it's now that NFL teams have figured out how to use multifaceted. Well, I should say most NFL teams. The Giants have never been terribly creative. They figured out how to use running backs in multifaceted ways. It's not just 20 times between the tackles.
Right.
I think he's going to do some really exciting things. You know, sort of Kareem Hunt-ish, except maybe even a little bit more Alvin Kamara, just in terms of his explosive ability.
Yeah.
I'm trying to think. There wasn't a ton of offensive players in this year's draft who I was super geeked about. I think it'll be fun to see what Sam Darnold can do with the Jets, because he was probably the highest rated quarterback by most people.
Yeah.
And he's the one that very few people are talking about because the Jets are just sort of a boring non-entity. But a rumor has it that he is just showing out so far and looks amazing.
That's what I hear too, man. And I actually think the Jets have kind of a sneaky, interesting quarterback room. You know, they offloaded Marcus Hackenberg and Bryce Petty, I think, is gone too. And they kind of
Christian Hackenberg.
Yeah, Christian Hackenberg. I was thinking of Marcus Davenport, who I want to say something about here in a minute too. But they got rid of Hackenberg. Darnold is there. Teddy Bridgewater, your old Minnesota Viking, is there. Josh McCown, who actually played good football last year. I'm reading these articles now about like different tiers of quarterbacks. The NFL, NFL.com and NFL Network did a big thing on quarterback tiers, and they've got McCown in the last tier, but McCown actually played like really good football last year. And for a really terrible team that people expected to go like 0 for the season, he actually played well. And, you know, it's tough, Piper, to pick like a Mendoza line for NFL quarterbacks.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I think once you get past like the top, you know, 10 or 12 guys, it's pretty much anybody's guess in terms of who's going to play well and who's going to be in like the bottom tier. And I think
at that point, it's so much a system thing, you know, like Case Keenum is very clearly not a top 15 quarterback in the NFL talent wise, but he was put in just the right system last year to succeed. Will he do the same thing this year? I don't know. And neither did the Vikings. And that's why they didn't pay him to come back.
Exactly.
I think the same is true for almost everybody who's, you know, sub Andrew Luck in talent.
Dude, right. Andrew Luck, man. What's your thinking about him? So I had a great moment with my dad. My dad has a very dry, sneaky sense of humor. And we were at a TJ Maxx this weekend. Long story. It's because we have wives. So the reason we were at a TJ Maxx.
Wives, not lives.
Yeah, we have wives. We're both happily married. So from time to time, we find ourselves in a TJ Maxx. But it was a TJ Maxx in the Indianapolis metro area. And there was like a clearance rack with Andrew Luck jerseys. And we're thumbing through these jerseys. And my dad's like, does it come with an ice pack on the shoulder? You know, like, is the guy even going to be able to throw the ball? So yeah. I think that's actually an interesting storyline. I think the Colts roster is a mess, but you know, luck.
But it's
one of
a lot
guys.
Less of a mess than it was 2 years ago when he played.
Exactly. It's showing signs of life at least. So I think a healthy Andrew Luck makes for an interesting storyline this year. And like, where do we rank a guy like that? You know, what tier does he slide into, provided he comes back and he's healthy and he's kind of a you know, a fraction of what he once was. So.
Well, he's had such variance in his career because he's, you know, he had a rookie year, which was rookie-ish, you know, showed a lot of promise. Yeah. And then he had a year where, you know, he was MVP level. And then he had a year where he was like, you know, whatever, a 30 touchdown, 20 interception guy and got hurt.
Right.
And so he hasn't shown for any stretch of time, you know, he hasn't done the Aaron Rodgers, like he is an elite player, or the Russell Wilson, you kind of know right. what he is. So yeah, I hope he is healthy because yeah. cause I like him as a player. He's really fun yeah. to watch. He's sort of Ben Roethlisberger without all that attitude and baggage.
Yeah.
And the NFL is just better when all the quarterbacks are good.
Yeah, totally, dude. Totally. I want to see him. I want to see him show out this year. And it's interesting to me. He seemed like really good player stuck on a really bad team trying to do too much. So as we bridge into the NBA offseason, like who's the NBA analog of that? So like super talented guy with a garbage team, just trying to do too much in a way that sort of hinders his development.
LeBron James.
Yeah, that's true. That's
even true, more true. So this year because he left Cleveland and went to an LA team that is now worse than that Cleveland team was, I think.
Dude, so true.
Especially because they've signed every head case besides Dwight Howard.
Dude, can we talk about that? Can we talk about like how quickly you think that team is going to just come apart? I think it's going to be like one of the greatest gong shows in the history of sports. We're like gearing up for that in the NBA with the LA Lakers next year with LeBron. Yeah, just talk about that. Talk about that move. We haven't talked much NBA since all this stuff went down.
Yeah, I mean, I think we recapped the draft and then we took a few weeks off in free agency. I mean, honestly, not a ton happened in free agency, but there was a small number of huge names that did interesting things. And so LeBron being the most interesting. First, I don't think it was any surprise he went to LA. You know, I hoped he would stay in Cleveland, but I totally understand why he left because that team doesn't, they're just not very well managed. There are those who will say that's partly on him because he's the pseudo GM. Maybe. I don't know how true that is. If he's the pseudo GM, he's certainly not at the Lakers because I guarantee these aren't the guys he wanted. Right. But then they got Lance Stephenson. They got Michael Beasley. They got Rajon Rondo. I feel like I'm missing somebody in there.
Dude, Michael Beasley, what a great, like, super hyped name of, I don't know, 5 or 6 years ago, whatever that was.
Yes, in full admission of, you know, everybody has terrible sports opinions.
Sure.
I was certain he was going to be better than Derrick Rose.
Yeah.
Because, yeah, I think Rose went number one, Beasley went number, because he was a 24-12 guy in college. And it was just a couple years after Durant. He put up real similar numbers to Durant. I knew he wasn't the same kind of player. What I didn't realize is that he also, like, 24-12 production on the court is equivalent to his production in smoking weed. Like, that's, he is an elite pot smoker. And
well,
so,
you know what? You look for that, you know?
And so I didn't realize that at the time. But yeah, so this is now LeBron supporting cast alongside Brandon Ingram, Alonzo Ball, and Kyle Kuzma, this promising young trio.
Yeah.
And I just look at it and I go, okay, well, if they had brought in like, I don't know, like Wayne Ellington and some of these guys who are just like solid veterans with a distinctly decent skill set to put around LeBron and the young guys, that's a team that can, they're not going to beat the Warriors because nobody is, but they're going to compete. The young guys can develop. And instead they brought in a bunch of guys who are going to be a terrible influence, who are going to hog the ball, who are going to ruin development. And like LeBron is going to, he's going to snap, I think.
Yeah, I think he is too. Yeah, I don't think he's going to do the Cleveland thing where, at least in Cleveland, he knew he was dragging that team to the finals. Like everybody kind of, nobody had misconceptions about like what they were doing in Cleveland.
Right.
And what they were doing was letting LeBron drag them to the finals and then seeing what happens.
Yeah, but everybody they just signed has misconceptions that they're better than LeBron.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah, everybody they signed is like a, is completely delusional as to like what they actually bring to the table. So it's going to be fascinating. It's going to be really, really fun and interesting to watch.
I'm inclined to agree with you if LeBron was like 28.
Yeah.
But what bugs me is that I know that the Lakers' intent is to get another superstar or two alongside him. They really gunning for Kawhi next offseason.
Yeah.
But they're functionally wasting one of the very small number of years that LeBron has left.
Dude, right, it's sand in the hourglass at this point.
I mean, the only way this works in their favor is if LeBron sits out half the season sort of voluntarily here and there. You know, he's like, oh, yeah. I have a sore ankle. To sort of save himself, because the man is 30, he's 33 or 34. He's been in the league since he was 18.
Right.
He's been in the finals for 8 straight years, which means he's played an additional somewhere between 2 and 4 full seasons in playoff games, which are even more rigorous than regular season games.
Absolutely.
So the fact that they're just burning this year makes me sad, because he's the best player of this generation, possibly the best player ever. I'm still Team Jordan, but and they're just wasting the year, and that bothers me.
Dude, so if you're the Lakers this year, do you go like full pitch count on LeBron and just like look at the schedule and plan to shut him down for certain games?
Oh,
and
you go like full Greg Popovich when Tim Duncan was 39, and he doesn't really play the second night of back-to-backs. He sits out, you know, he'll sit out if like, you know, Memphis or Minnesota is coming to town, where it's like, that's going to be a competitive, rugged game, but it doesn't really matter. And we're not, you know, and if they miss the playoffs, so what? And in the West, there's a shot that they do miss the playoffs.
Oh, most definitely.
Because it's a loaded conference, more so now than ever.
Exactly. So let's talk about the West. Let's talk about a player and a personality that I really like going to a team that I really don't like. Which is Boogie to the Golden State Warriors. Now, this just strikes me as like, you know, exhibit A1 of the rich getting richer. And I just kind of feel like the rest of the NBA should just, you know, take the season off, and they should play with 4 teams, and they should start the playoffs like, you know, in a few weeks, and just let it play out. This is crazy to me. How this happened. So
here's why I don't think people need to be upset about Boogie going to the Golden State Warriors. If all you're looking at is Boogie's last 2 or 3 years going to that Warriors team, so you're like, he's, you know, skills wise and production wise, a top maybe 3 big man in the league.
Yeah.
Attitude wise, questionable, clearly. Sure. Here's the thing. He's not that guy right now. He is a large man with a ruptured Achilles tendon.
That's true.
Who took that deal because there weren't, he would have taken a 2-year, you know, $30 million deal if that was on the table. Yeah. But I don't think it was from anybody.
Dude, let's talk about precedent on like big athletes coming back from Achilles. Like, what does that look like? Do we have much in the way of precedent there? And if so, like, how is it going?
Off the top of my head, I can't think of any great examples, but I know that every former player who's a commentator now, a lot of, you know, front office people, et cetera, are just, they say like that is one of the hardest injuries to come back from. I think Kobe was a ruptured Achilles who came back.
Yeah.
And, you know, he was a shell of himself afterwards. He still put up numbers, but that's because the Lakers let him take 38 shots a game.
I was going to say that's because he shot like every time down the floor.
And here's the thing. Kobe was one of the most maniacal workers of anybody in NBA history.
Sure.
And Boogie is not, to put it lightly. He's maniacal, but not the most maniacal worker. And so there's a decent chance that he will never be the same player again.
That's true.
He's not coming back until January at the earliest. If he does come back in January, he won't be kind of play himself into shape until March or April.
Right.
Again, if the thing is fully healed, there's no complications. So what this was the Warriors spending their like lower level, mid-level exception on a – it's like getting a bullpen guy at the trade deadline in baseball kind of thing, where you're like, well, he'll help us maybe in the playoffs.
Sure,
maybe, but there's still like we don't know that. And so they basically what they're saying is – we like the team we have. If we get something out of him, great. If not, it was $5 million, which in the NBA doesn't mean anything. For Boogie, it's a chance to get in the postseason for the first time ever, maybe.
Yeah.
And that's it. I mean, this is a – it's really actually a low wattage move with big names.
Dude, right. It's a low risk, potentially high reward move. But even if the reward isn't high, like nobody's really out anything.
I will say I loved the move from Boogie's perspective.
Oh, most definitely. Most definitely. It makes a ton of sense for him. It's a great situation to rehab in the sense that, you know, I think it'll keep him motivated too, because know, the chance to come back on a like on a really significant team is a big deal.
And if he comes out of there with a reputation for working well with the other guys, not, you know, he's not fighting with Steve Kerr. He's not pissing off Kevin Durant, you know, Steph Curry saying good things about him. That means that if he's 80, 90% of his previous self, he's going to get a huge contract from somebody. And, you know, whether it's the Lakers or whoever else who have money next offseason, because he's proven that he can mesh in a pretty, pretty tight system.
Yeah. Yeah. No, most definitely. I think it's a really compelling move. Pipe, let's talk about one more NBA move. This is Kawhi to Toronto. And in the same way that I explained a Canadian trade to you, I want you to explain this Canadian trade to me. we have another player that we both really like. I think we both are big Kawhi Leonard guys. But talk me through this one.
Yeah, this was an interesting one because there was so little backstory on it. Yeah. It was mostly just confused silence, kind of what where's Kawhi at? You know, all of last season he missed all but 9 games. There was his teammates kind of threw some shots at him. His coach seemed pretty tense about it. There just didn't seem to be a lot of clarity on how healthy he is and where's his head at and what does he want out of the game. And so it just sort of became an untenable situation where San Antonio couldn't bring him back or he just didn't want to be there.
Yeah.
So they flipped him. Again, they're still not like I don't think anybody knows how healthy he is. If he's going to be 100% this year, Toronto made a great deal because they got a top probably 5 or 7 player in the league. Two years ago, he was a top 3 or 4 player in the league. You know,
most definitely.
Like LeBron, Durant, Kawhi, those were the guys. Yeah. And, you know, former finals MVP, whether or not that was deserved. And then they gave up DeMar DeRozan and Jakob Poeltl, who is, you know, he's just a nice rotation big man, kind of, you know, the kind of guy who will play until he's 38 because he's smart and rebounds and is in the right position. Popovich will love him, you know.
Yeah.
And then I think there was a protected first round pick in there, which is always nice for the team.
Yeah.
But I think it's really interesting for both teams because San Antonio, when you lose Kawhi, you don't have any stars left. And so well, you have LaMarcus, who's okay. But that's a team that could be ready to rebuild, but it's the tail end of Pop's career. And so they don't want to rebuild. So they go out and get an all-star level guy in DeRozan, who's a weird player because he never shoots any threes, or if he does, he's not very good at it. But he can score, and he's, by all accounts, a good teammate, and has he's kind of built himself into a really good player.
Yeah.
And you give up this elite guy, but nobody knows where he's at. Toronto's in a position now where they have 1 year to try to get Kawhi to stay there. That's what I think that's what they want. But if he walks, I think that's also something they're fine with because they know that a rebuild is coming. And it's a lot easier to do that if your star player signs somewhere else and you're like, well, we don't have any choice but to, you know, dump Kyle Lowry and then rebuild. So it's they sort of hedged their bets and got a superstar at the same time.
Yeah.
So I'm intrigued. I don't think San Antonio is going to be any fun to watch this year, though.
Right.
It's going to be a bunch of dudes shooting contested 17-foot jumpers is what it's going to, and then shooting free throws. Like, that's the entire team.
Exactly. Exactly. Pipe, can we talk about, like, things that aren't fun to watch? And this is a little bit of a rant that I have, and it regards NBA Summer League. So, first of all, before I get into this, do you watch NBA Summer League games?
No, I watch like the NBA.com highlight videos afterwards just to see kind of who did what. I pay attention to the reporting on it.
Yeah.
But I don't, I'm not going to watch those games. It's like watching YMCA guys or YMCA games of guys who can jump.
Dude, right. So here's my thing with NBA Summer League games. It used to be this sort of like almost fetishistic, like you would get one or two games like leaking out in a summer. And I feel like, and correct me if I'm wrong, Piper, but I feel like almost as recently as like a decade ago, they were playing these games outside. They were playing in like practice jerseys. It seemed like something different. You know what I mean?
Well, yeah, there was actually two leagues. One was in Orlando and one was in Vegas. And, but they were almost like, think like high school basketball camp scrimmages was sort of the feel of it. There was multiple games going on in like a field house kind of thing.
And it was super fun in that regard. Like, I remember running across Summer League games like 5 or 10 years ago and being like, oh, this is cool. You know, like it felt like a like an inside look at something. So now I feel like ESPN runs every Summer League game. They're in the arenas. They're in like, you know, game type uniforms. And I just feel like,
oh, yeah, they're like sponsored. It's like these are, you know, yeah. they look like European soccer jerseys almost in terms of like the sponsors.
They look like European soccer jerseys, but they also look like NBA uniforms in the right. sense that, like, you know, they're of that quality. They're in the arenas. You know, some of the arenas are as full as they would be for a, you know, a marginal NBA game anyway. And yeah, it just creates this weird effect where it's like, I'm never away from the NBA. You know what the NBA is like an annoying child that like won't, you know, give you 10 minutes to like collect your thoughts in a room. You know what I mean? They're just there all the time. And they're going to be there again when the season starts in 20 minutes. And I just feel like I need Summer League games to go away so that I can enjoy the real games and so that there can be a sense of like a fresh beginning. You know what I mean?
When they skew fans' expectations so much because,
oh yeah,
I mean, it's, if they were viewed like, say, spring training games in baseball, that would be okay. Cause spring training is sort of like, it's like the fun warm up to the season, but nobody's like watching those games, you know?
Dude, right. Nobody's trying to like infer much of anything from those games. Yeah. You're happy those games are there because baseball's been gone for a few months.
Yeah, you know, you pay attention to how your new acquisitions are doing and things like that. And it's a little different because it's the full roster, not just the prospects. But that's right. One of the things about the NBA Summer League that's so weird is that it just creates a sense of like super stardom for guys who are G Leaguers. You know, like they're yeah. never going to make it in the NBA, but they can dunk all over people in this league.
Yeah.
And you know, and guys like Trae Young, for example, who started off Summer League so bad. And yeah. Part of me was like, well, that's what I expected. And then, of course, he settled in and became a really good player, and he did really sure. well. But what does that mean? Who knows? Yeah. Because he's playing against a bunch of guys who don't know how to play defense.
Exactly.
And
exactly.
So it just, yeah, it skews things. It creates hype where there should really just be sort of like an eyebrow raise. Like that should be the reaction. Like, huh, that's interesting. And instead exactly. people are, you know, Stephen A. Smithing up over how, you know, how exciting these rookies are or how bad they're doing or whatever.
Dude, I know it's crazy. And there must be some demand for it or else, you know, or maybe ESPN's just like filling time that would otherwise be allocated to like the Midwest poker tour or hot dog eating contests or, like, the fact that cornhole tournaments are on TV now, to me, is just, like, that's like a come Lord Jesus moment, you know? Like, well, there's not much hope for the world anymore.
I blame the Olympics because every 4 years, people get all geeked up about curling, which is essentially just cornhole.
It's cornhole on ice.
On ice, yeah. Like,
it's crazy.
You can't, those people are not athletes.
Right.
They're competing, but they're not athletes. You know, yeah. poker tournaments, the fact that poker has become a TV thing, or it really did during the rise of Texas Hold'em probably 15 years ago. But yeah. Like that's – how does anybody watch poker on TV?
Yeah.
Come Lord Jesus is a good response. Burn it all to the ground is a good response.
Yeah.
You know, just give me play replays of like Kenny Stabler's best games or something. Like just do something besides this nonsense.
Something athletic. Yeah. Even in the early days of ESPN, there was like, you know, they were putting Australian rules football on and it was uh-huh. this weird thing, but at least it was super athletic and guys were like, you know, tackling each other and running a whole bunch. And you're like, I don't even know what I'm watching, but this is kind of cool, you know, and it's ESPN and it's 2 a.m.
Yeah, like the Strongest Man competitions were like huge Norwegians are like throwing tree trunks over their heads and stuff or pulling Mack trucks. Like, I'm not that interested in the winner of it, but I'm fascinated by the ability of these guys to do that thing.
Dude, right. You get the sense that you're watching athletes, you know, whereas, yeah, poker, cornhole, I don't know, man, it's grim. I think I'm just getting old, Piper. You know, well, I think that's
I feel like the basic premise of this should be if your average viewer can do the same thing these people are doing, it probably shouldn't be on TV.
I agree. Yeah, anybody can sit and play poker.
I mean, like, things like golf are kind of borderline until you realize the precision with which they play. And you're like, yeah, the average person can swing a club, but they can't do that.
Yeah, and all the golfers are like super athletic robots now anyway, so they are athletes of a kind.
Yeah, I mean, you watch...
They're like super athletic, waspy, hot robots, you know? It's like watching a 90s like boys boarding school movie, and they're all like Chet Danbury, you know?
What was the name of that? What was the name of that? Brendan Fraser, Matt Damon was in it.
Dude, School Ties. I love that movie.
That was a great movie, but yeah, it is. I mean, the whole point was that they were waspy white dudes, and then one of them was a secret Jew.
And all the other guys were named like, you know, Chet Danbury, and they were all treating the Brendan Fraser character badly. That's a great movie.
But the funny thing is, Brendan Fraser's character could have actually been named Brendan Fraser, and it would have fit right in. Like, that's the perfect name for that.
Dude, it is the perfect name. He could have been one of the waspy douches, you know. I feel like the 90s was the king of like boys boarding school movies. You know what I mean? We had a whole spate of them in the 90s, and then we kind of went away from that. So,
I mean, it's probably for the best, given the stories that have come out about boys boarding anything since then. But
dude, that's true. Yeah, you know, that's so true.
We've lost some innocence since then.
It's the end of an era, man, for sure, for sure. And Piper, I feel like we're nearing the end of this program in that we've started at Johnny Manziel and we've ended at boys boarding school movies in the 90s. So,
you know, Johnny Manziel might have benefited from going to a boys boarding school. Might have kept him on the straight and narrow.
He might have. Now, here's an interesting hypothetical to end the show with. Could Brendan Fraser's character in School Ties, who was also a quarterback, could he have kept Johnny Manziel on the bench? Would it have been another Hamilton Tiger Cats type experience for Johnny at if he had gone to the same Tony boarding school that Brendan Fraser's character went to?
See, I think to mix my sports movies, Johnny Manziel would have been Sunshine from Remember the Titans, who shows up and takes the job. You know, he kind of has to wait his turn, but then he gets his chance and shows what's up. But I think Brendan Fraser's character would have been sort of teammate enough to take a back seat and, you know, go play safety or something.
Dude, yeah, I feel like Brendan Fraser, he was tall, he was athletic, he could run. I feel like he would have moved to tight ends. And Johnny Manziel settles in at quarterback, and I think they would have gone undefeated. That would have been a really hard team to beat. And even though he was a waspy douche, you still had Matt Damon who could run the ball, and he could do some things too. So that was early Matt Damon, early young Matt Damon.
At the risk of racial stereotyping, it is worth realizing that they were all white dudes. And so that undefeated would have been tough unless they played in an all-white league.
Dude, they did. They played all-white, like, boarding school teams. So, yeah, they would have gotten rolled by a real team, obviously. But for the league that they were playing in, I think they would have been tough to beat, for sure. But, Piper, all we can do is speculate. You know, never see that. We'll never see Manziel on the field.
Maybe that's your next film writing project. You know, your next screenwriting effort will be a mashup of Remember the Titans and School Ties.
School Ties 2, the Manziel era. I like it.
Call it School Titans or something like that.
Ooh, I like it. I like it. That's got legs, Piper. But we've done what we always do on this program, and that we've wandered to and fro throughout some sports issues. We didn't get to the Mariners, but we'll get to the Mariners next time, I think.
Yeah, baseball season runs until, Christmas, so we've got plenty of time.
Forever. We got plenty of time to talk about the M's. They've kind of regressed to the mean. They're losing a lot of those one-run games that they used to be winning, and so they're kind of coming back down to earth. But we'll talk about that and more baseball next time. And until then, do we have a character name, Piper? Oh, do we have a player? This always sneaks up on me.
I think in honor of him holding the job, I think Jeremiah Masoli is a good one.
That's a good one cadence-wise, too. So we've wandered to and fro throughout this program. Until next time, Jeremiah Masoli.
The Happy Rant is brought to you by Resonate Recordings. If you go to resonaterecordings.com, you can see the full range of services they offer. So if you're considering starting a podcast, they are the ones we recommend going with. Again, go to resonaterecordings.com to see their prices, to connect with them and ask any questions, and to see what they can do to help you launch, edit, master, and improve your podcast. Again, go to resonaterecordings.com to see what they can do to help you launch and improve your podcast.
The content we feed our minds will eventually show up in our lives. If we feed our minds the lies and confusion of this world, our lives will begin to reflect worldliness. But if we feed our minds the truth of the gospel, our lives will start to reflect the heart and character of Jesus. I'm John Stonge, and each week I host the Dwell on These Things podcast, where we take a deep look at the Word of God and learn what it means to apply it to our lives. We don't skip difficult passages, and we don't gloss over the truth. If you're looking for a show that will put your mind in a better place and help you understand God's Word with more clarity, you can listen to the Dwell on These Things podcast at lifeaudio.com or on your favorite podcasting app.